We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. willpledge.org. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu, this is Focus. Good morning. The program is produced by Harriet Williamson, our technical director this morning, Kyle Mabry. My name is Celeste Quinn. Today we open up the phone lines for questions about computers. This is a topic we take up once a month on the first Thursday of the month. Debbie Flieger and Jim Eyrick of CITES join us this month. CITES is the acronym for the University of Illinois' Campus Information Technologies and Education Services. Jim Eyrick is a wireless network designer at CITES. Debbie Flieger is a network engineer at CITES. Listeners, you can join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. Debbie, Jim, good to have you back.
Nice to be here.
Is there anything that you would like to begin with this morning before we take some calls?
Well, I think I know people are this time of year thinking about what should we give people for Christmas.
Yep.
And
what's at the top of your list?
Oh, forgiving or getting?
Either one, you pick.
I think the top of my wish list, if somebody really had lots of money to spend on me, would be get an iPad.
Yeah.
They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. I'm also thinking it might be fun to play with the Kinect.
I don't know that.
Oh, if you have for the Xbox 360,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
I'm a PS3 person, so
okay.
I don't get that.
All right.
I'm mostly looking at enhancing my Blu-ray collection for my stuff.
Okay. Yeah, an iPad would be nice.
I'm sure. I've still resisted. I haven't played with one at all.
All three of us are without an iPad at the moment. Well, we'll see. We've been very good this year, though, have we not?
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's take a call now from a listener in Champaign. On line one, good morning.
Good morning. The network guy is who I need to talk to, I think. I have a desktop hooked to my printer, and I got two new laptops for Christmas, and I want to be able to use the printer with them, and I can't figure out how to do it. The laptops have Windows 7. And the desktop has Windows XP multimedia with a third upgrade, whatever that is.
Service Pack 3.
Yeah, right.
So you have the laptops online, right? They can surf the internet?
Yeah, I have a wireless router, and I can get on the internet with them.
Okay. So one way to do this is that you on the desktop PC, you have to go to it and share the printer.
Uh-huh.
And what you're going to do is that if the printer is plugged in like with USB or the old style parallel, USB, then that printer can only actually ever communicate really with the desktop it's plugged into.
Right.
But what you can do is basically proxy print jobs through the desktop to the printer from the laptops.
Mm-hmm.
So on the computer, you would go into the printer properties and you would say, share this printer.
Uh-huh.
And then on your desktop and your computer, your desktop computer has a name, right? You can go into computer my properties and it'll say computer name.
Uh-huh.
And you'll go to your, and it's possible that they'll even auto discover this, is you'll go to your laptop and you'll say, I need to add a network shared printer. And it may actually find it for you. It'll say on this computer name, I found this printer, and it'll list the printer model for you. Or you may have to go to, what I would do is go to the start and run, or the open on Windows 7, I think, and do a /// and type in the name of the desktop computer,
uh-huh,
and press enter, and hopefully that'll bring up all the devices that desktop printer is sharing with the network. One of them will be the printer. You'll double click on it, and that will initiate the process to set that printer up on your laptop. Now, because the desktop is Windows XP, most likely it's not going to be able to provide the drivers that the Windows 7 laptop needs. So you'll want to go, you'll either want to have the disk that came with the printer, that if it has Windows 7 drivers on it, or you'll need to go to the manufacturer's website and download Windows 7 drivers for that printer.
Oh, okay.
Now, one thing I like to have you check is that depending on the model of the printer, many, especially if it's a higher-end inkjet or laser printer, is that it may actually also support an Ethernet connection. So an actual network connection with a printer becomes part of the network instead of just being tethered to a desktop machine. And this is what I recommend to my family. A lot of when they say, I want to get a printer, the first thing I say is, please get a laser printer. Because they are more costly up front, and they are more costly when you buy supplies, but you don't have to buy supplies as frequently. And a lot of laser printers now have Ethernet connections on them. And that way, they can just plug the printer straight into the network, their wireless router, and all the computers talk to the printer directly. So then, like, in this case, if your desktop computer is turned off, you won't be able to print from a laptop.
I leave it on all the time.
Okay. And then if it is on the network, then that desktop would not have to be on all the time. So do check for that just to make sure if that printer has an Ethernet connection, because it would be simpler if you could put the printer on the network and have all the the two laptops and the desktop talk to the printer through the network.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. This is Focus, and we're talking this morning about computers. If you've got a question about a computer or computers, give us a call and talk with Jim and Debbie. They'll give you a hand. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455 is the toll-free line. And we can also take questions by email. The address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, we talked a little bit about the iPad as something that's probably on the top of the wish list for a lot of folks, but there are more tablets to choose from. Have you taken a look at some of the other options that are out there? I know Apple is way out ahead of the competition, but there are other choices.
I've seen them. I haven't played with any of them. Arcos has their tablet. They recently upgraded it as of, I think, this morning. It's now running a newer version of Android. So that's one of there's a lot of Android apps coming out, or Android tablets, I mean. Android was originally the Google-sponsored mobile phone operating system that competes with Apple's iOS mobile phone operating system and BlackBerry, and then now Windows Mobile, the new Windows 7 mobile phones. I've seen some other ones. I'm not sure of the brand names. I like the Android. I carry an Android phone, so I'm certainly open to using a tablet that has Android on it. But in my opinion, an Android device still doesn't have the operating system doesn't have all the corners aren't round yet compared to an Apple powered device.
And where are the price points? Are they similar?
I think the Arco stuff looks a lot cheaper. I hadn't heard of it, so I Googled it while Jim was talking. And they've got a mini tablet below $100, and it looked like they have a pretty nice looking tablet
$100.
And says below $300. So they're a little bit on the less expensive side.
The cheapest Apple iPad that you can buy is $500, $499, I think, $499.99 probably. So if they're under that way, then they're quite a bit of price savings.
Okay. What do you think the next generation of tablets might offer? I'm confident that Apple's at work on that and other manufacturers as well.
Certainly longer battery life. I mean, that's one thing we expect from our mobile devices year after year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the battery technology gets better, more processing power. I know that the iPad is, compared to a desktop or a laptop PC, is underpowered. Not that it needs it for the role that they envisioned it for, but it's still, you can't do heavy gaming on it or things like you can on a big gaming ring, it's expected that laptops and tablets would always be behind desktops in that market. But it just progress marches on, I guess.
I think a U-facing camera. They just did that with the iPhone this summer so that you could do that FaceTime video conferencing kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the iPad doesn't have that. And I don't know if the other tablets, the Android tablets, have that right now or not.
And is there a way now to make your iPad a phone?
I don't know. If there would, it would be, I mean, there's
Skype.
The iPad has... the certain versions of it have cellular communications built into it, but I don't think that they enable it at all for voice. Now, it's possible that somebody has some extra thing you can plug into it. I'm not positive of the features of whether it has a microphone built into it or not.
It doesn't have a microphone built into it, but the jack, the audio jack, does have a microphone input in it. So, like, the headphones that come with the iPhone will work to do audio in. My husband's got an iPad, and he made Skype work on it. So you can use those kind of phone technologies, even though you can't make an actual cellular phone call.
And as we're waiting for longer battery life from these devices, what can we do to keep the battery going for as long as it can?
I think that they've done especially Apple's done a really good job of optimizing when the screen turns off. Some of the things you can do on your own, and you can do this applies to any cell phone also, or even your laptop, and is to minimize the brightness of the screen. So, if you can, the more light the screen's sending out, it just takes battery power for that. I'm not sure what else you could go through. Any ideas, Debbie, besides changing the battery or the screen brightness?
That's the biggest one. I mean, that's what makes the most difference on my iPhone. And not leaving it in something that keeps it busy. Like I found, I forget to actually switch out of a game and put it in its case. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the games that keeps the screensaver from kicking in. Because otherwise,
Right.
And I think I've paused it or whatever, and I'm just assuming it'll go to sleep. And I pull it out of my case, 10 minutes later, and it's hot and the battery's halfway drained. Those kinds of, but that's user things, that's not technology things.
Right. Let's take a call from a listener in Champaign. Line one, good morning.
Good morning. I've just now been able to catch most of the show, so I hope this hasn't been asked. But in your discussion of tablets, I'm wondering if anybody knows anything more about this new Dell unit that they're working into some commercials. I've seen it in a couple of the basically Microsoft commercials about the cloud, but it's a Dell that looks like a laptop, and then it seems to fold, and the screen itself is on swivels within the frame, so when it folds down, it looks like a tablet. Are you familiar at all with what I'm trying to describe?
I'm looking at a picture of it. That's as much as familiarity as I have with it now, actually. This is something I haven't seen. Is this new Dell Inspiron Duo, and we've seen some devices. Inside our own department, we have several tablet PCs that are basically they can be a laptop or not in exactly the same way this works. But you swivel the screen around, turn it around. Now those have all been ones where you had to use a pen to use it. This one certainly looks like it's touch sensitive. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm really surprised that I haven't seen Dell advertising it, that it's just simply been placed into, Microsoft operating system ads.
Right. I don't know if it's more of an experiment for them. The previous versions of Dell's tablets that we've used were the XT2. I don't know. I think that may be still the newest one they have, which was more of a, basically, it's a laptop and then the entire monitor was just on a swivel. Again, it was pin-based, which is what most previous tablets had been until these new capacitance screens started coming out on the iPhones and the other phone devices. It looks innovative. I'm not sure. I still haven't decided really for me whether a tablet is a place to go for something I'd use for work or anything. Or I've heard that the iPad makes a great, I think some people are calling the coffee table or the couch computer.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching a movie and you're like, man, what other movie's that guy been in? And you can pull up IMDb on your tablet and it's right there. It's always, you don't have to boot it up or log into it. It's just push the button and it comes on and you can check things.
I'm looking at the iPad and I have to admit that, I think they're really cool and I'd like to get one, but the only reason that I can really justify getting one is because I like gadgets and I like toys and I'd like to have one, but if Android is starting to get into that, I also have a Droid phone, and I love the Android operating system, and I'd almost rather wait until they get that up and going and a little bit of, field testing behind it before I go. Did you happen to mention any manufacturers to keep an eye on with that?
Well, one of them would be the Arcos.
Okay.
So that's a company, and they've been making multimedia players, portable multimedia players, for a long time. And so they have some less, certainly the ones we looked at that Debbie looked up earlier were certainly less expensive than the current iPad prices. I'm not positive. Right now, like I said, I'm a gadget person, and I'm just trying to not, I just know that that's the only reason that I can justify spending the money on the tablet, so I haven't actually spent a lot of time investigating it. So I'm slightly unfamiliar with other manufacturers that are coming out with tablets right now. I know that the market's heating up. So I read articles that somebody else has brought another model to market, but I just haven't been interested in it so far to actually go in and spend some time figuring out which vendor's currently top of the pack.
Yeah, I'm doing.
All right, well, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Debbie.
I would say I pulled up. I was reading the tech specs for the Inspiron Duo, and while that looks really neat, it's over an inch thick, and so having that full keyboard with the tablet, it's not competition for the iPad in terms of form factor. Possibly more functional with the keyboard built in for somebody who's trying to do a combination of a tablet and notebook. My husband took his iPad on two trips without taking any other computers and didn't miss having the other computers, but it wouldn't do to replace his work desktop by any stretch.
And this device also is an Atom-powered processor, which is what you typically find in a lot of netbooks, and it has a 10-inch screen. So to me, this is probably somewhere, it's the netbook meets the tablet point. Maybe so if you need a keyboard for something and you don't want to carry around a full PC, it's a smaller machine that you can actually type well on. You have that, and then it's also that couch computer I was talking about, I think, maybe.
Yeah. I wonder what the future is for notebooks. What do you think?
I think there's still a use, certainly in business. I previously had, for the work I do remotely, I had it was still a laptop, but it only had a 12-inch screen on it, and I had issues with being able to do a lot of remote desktop work and have enough screen real estate that I could actually use it effectively without having to always zoom in on this window. Okay, now zoom in on this window to see what was going on. For me, the 15-inch, 14-something to 15-something has been the sweet spot for me for sitting at a desk or sitting on my couch and using a laptop and finding it useful. So I think laptops have a good... still going strong. I think netbooks are still going to have, they're going to have people that want to carry them around, something they can just, that's lightweight, longer battery life, not very powerful. But for some stuff, I think it's just the tool for the job.
This is Focus, and this morning we're talking about computers in this hour of the program. Jim Irick is with us, also Debbie Flagger there with Sites. Jim is a wireless network designer. Debbie is a network engineer. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, you can join us this morning with questions about computers. Join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have an email question now from a listener. My monitor on my desktop keeps turning off and on when the computer is resting. You can hear the degaussing function going on over and over. How do I stop this?
Well, the first thing I'll say, if it's degaussing, that means it's a CRT tube, and you might want to look at a flat screen. It'll cost you less electricity, if nothing else.
It's actually possible that the CRT, depending on the age, I'm guessing that it may actually be older, is that the CRT is, well, I mean, I guess we can, if it's only happening when the computer is turned off, we can probably assume that it's not a power cable problem or anything like that. But it's possible that the power saving system in the monitor is either malfunctional or it's malfunctioning, or that it's old compared to the computer and it's not understanding, they're not jiving together. That would be, and again, I would probably look at, if you still have a CRT, you really probably should consider, there are very inexpensive, good quality flat screens that don't pull as much, generate as much heat and pull as much electricity as a CRT did. They certainly take up less desk space. So and it's certainly not worth trying to have the CRT looked at to get fixed. So or spending having a tech even come to your house to look at it, in my opinion. I would definitely just go, okay, maybe it's time for a new monitor.
Yeah, okay. if it doesn't understand the whole concept of sleep by the computer, that could be a big problem.
All right. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a very strange problem. I just reinstalled my operating system, and I'm running Windows XP. And I have a website that I can't get to in Firefox, which is the Champaign Public Library, champaign.org. I can get to it through Chrome, and I can get to it through Internet Explorer, but it's forbidden 403 error on Firefox. I have no idea where to even start to sort that problem out.
So you can get to it with every operating or every browser you have but Firefox, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what that would point me to is that there is a cache problem. So I would go into Firefox and go into like the personal settings and clear out all the cache and the settings. Look to see if there's some sort of proxy. Where I've seen this happen before is when a machine's been infected with malware.
Mm-hmm.
I know you said you just reinstalled it, but what I've seen is that some of the malware will put a proxy setting in your browser settings and therefore redirect all the traffic through the malware device. Basically, they can then insert ads into what you're surfing. They know what you're surfing, or even worse, they can try to steal information. So I would go into Firefox and look for the it's under network connection settings,
okay.
And look for anything that's set to proxy because on a home computer it should be set to none or default up. Yeah, I would say it's probably should be set to none, and then the other problem is to go and clear the cache. Now if that stays. And unless you have favorites that you need to get out of Firefox, which there are instructions on the internet that you could Google for to how to back up favorites in Firefox, my recommendation would be then to completely uninstall Firefox and delete the Firefox profile folders that are under your home directories.
Okay.
Again, in order to find those locations, your best thing is probably to, again, search the internet and find instructions where people say about deleting their Firefox profile folders.
Excellent. Thank you for giving me a place to start.
Yep.
Thanks for the call. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455, and our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. An Apple question someone asked me to ask you, and I think, Debbie, you're our Apple person. The Apple upgrade to Snow Leopard, is it worth it?
Boy, that's a tough one, because you've got to pay for it. If everything's working fine, Leopard was really good. They're still supporting Leopard. Snow Leopard had a lot of fixes. A lot of things run faster. Really, the difference between Leopard and Snow Leopard is that they went through and cleaned up a lot of stuff, made it more native Intel, made things more things that are 64-bit instead of 32-bit, taking advantage of more of what your computer is capable of doing. So you're going to see an improved performance for most system-type things, and also for some just everyday-type things. It enables more of the 64-bit world for you. But do you absolutely have to have it? Will it make a difference? No, not really. You know, as long as Leopard's still being supported and you can still get security patches for it, you certainly don't absolutely need it.
Okay. We have some other listeners standing by ready to talk with us. We go next to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was interested if you have a recommendation for a simple video editing software for family movies.
Mac or Windows?
For Windows.
I could have told you for Mac. Jim, you got any ideas?
I actually don't. I'm sorry. It's not something I've ever really worked with on a simple small home scale. I've worked with larger production, you know, like TV studio systems, but never actually one in a home. Maybe somebody can email or call us in and let us know. Because honestly, if I could Google for something and come up with a name. But I wouldn't want to recommend it because I'd have no experience with it.
Yeah, you know, one of our staff members here is doing a lot of that work for our website. And if Sean Powers, if you're listening, maybe you could email us something here at will-talk@illinois.edu about what we're using. And eventually all of us are going to be trained on something so that we can you know, it's going to be, we're going to be doing more than radio. It's going to be multimedia world here. And I'm getting a signal from Kyle. Maybe, is there anything? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. And Kyle tells us that we're using Sony Vegas.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Sony Vegas.
Sony Vegas, okay.
Like Las Vegas, only it's Sony.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're very welcome. Hope that helps.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Backing up a second, somebody reminded me that the one big reason to go to Snow Leopard is if you're on the U of I campus, the new Exchange 2010, or you're using Exchange server, you've got to have Snow Leopard for that. So I don't know if the listener was thinking about something work-related or something personal. For personal stuff, it's not such a big deal. But if you're on the U of I campus, we're all going to Exchange 2010 for email.
That's right.
Snow Leopard works and Leopard doesn't. So that can be a big deal.
Okay, that will be a big deal. Next, we go to another caller. Listener in Champaign on line 2. Hi.
Hello. Hi. I am just calling to say that it's great to answer, you know, questions over the radio about computers, but I wanted to let your listeners know and let you guys know about the IMC Computer Help Desk. I called a few months ago and to let you guys know about it.
Right.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about it and say that we've been volunteering to do this since November 2009. To date, we've helped about 170 users. Anyone can walk into the Independent Media Center at 202 South Broadway in Urbana and get help for free in person. Those are Tuesdays from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. and Thursdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. We've replaced computer screens, like when people walk in with MacBooks with smashed LCD monitors. We've replaced those, saved users like $400 for repair costs. We remove viruses. We scrub the nastiest viruses. We've tackled a lot of issues that you would normally have to pay tens or, you know, hundreds of dollars to get repaired. And we do it for free. And the deal is that users sit down and walk through the troubleshooting process with us. And they get something out of the experience, too. So I just wanted to let everybody know about that.
Okay. You want to give us the hours again for Tuesday?
Sure. The IMC Computer Help Desk runs Tuesdays, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay.
And Thursdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Okay.
And you can walk into the Independent Media Center, and if you don't see us immediately, then you can ask the person at the desk or whoever's around where the help desk is running, and they'll point you to usually the computer lab. And there will be a group of people there, and someone will walk up and greet you and invite you to sit down, and we'll start talking about your problem.
Okay. Do you guys take appointments?
Right now it's walk-in only.
Okay.
So we typically have between 3 and 4 volunteers per session. The attendance is typically dependent on, you know, something like the weather. Like this past Tuesday, we only had one user walk in, but sometimes we've had as many as 7. And so it's usually we have to do things first come, first serve right now.
Mm-hmm.
So usually the sooner you get there, the better. When you bring your laptop, make sure you bring the power cord. If you bring your desktop, you don't need to bring anything except just the tower. The case, whatever peripheral you're having a problem with. So if you're having a problem with your camera, make sure to bring your camera, you know, so on and so forth.
Okay, very good. And the IMC is the Independent Media Center, and it's it's adjacent to Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana.
That's right.
Okay, well, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thanks for the reminder. All right. Other calls are invited, questions, comments, something you can lend a hand with, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. The email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. I wanted to ask you what you make of this. I had this experience with Google recently where I received a message below the toolbar, and it said, Google would like to have access to your location. The Google toolbar will periodically use the network to keep your location up to date.
I've seen that.
Yeah.
So it's used to personalize the search results that are given back to you. Like if you type in pizza restaurant, if you've allowed it to know your location, when you type that in, it'll actually reply back and you'll see things listing local pizza restaurants. So it's another one of those things with Google. It's you trade them a little bit of this and they give you a little bit of better back.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, and that's why they let you shut it off.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing is that when you're on a desktop or lap, especially a desktop PC that has no way of knowing where it is except based on its IP address. So, Google has some stuff built in where using the Wi-Fi, if there's an application running or on your phone, they can actually figure out where in the world you are, or at least a fairly good estimate. Whereas your desktop, the only thing they have to go by is either the IP address or if you tell them. And my home ISP, Internet Service Provider, its IPs are listed as being in Cleveland. So all kinds of times I'll be searching in Google from there, and it'll list me. It'll things be like, hey, you're local to Cleveland. Here, check this out. I'm like, that's not very helpful. Thanks.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful about that. But otherwise, at least they're asking you, giving you the option to not do it.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't done it. I haven't touched it. So I just thought, yeah. Okay. Let's take another call. Listener in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yeah, don't touch it.
Okay.
I don't know. You have. I'd like to download some. I don't have any of that stuff. You know, download. Some of the archives from the Focus. It's what MP3, and what's the other one you can do it on?
I don't know.
Is it real time or real media?
Real player. And let me just go and look that up.
Because I'm going to buy one or the other, and I want to know which one is the better one to buy.
Oh, maybe somebody in the station can help me out here.
I wrote it down, but what happens, it was on a sheet of paper, which means it's lost.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe somebody here in the station
It looks like you've got MP3s you can download and AAC.
Oh, okay.
Which is?
I'm clicking on I'm just going to get it. I think that's Apple's format, but Apple can read MP3s as well. So if for streaming Real Audio, Windows Media, or QuickTime Stream, all of which you can get for free for Windows or Mac real time, those shouldn't cost you anything. And so you can download the archives, it looks like, in MP3 format and AAC format. Just about everything can do MP3s. You can buy MP3 players, Windows and PCs, and I guess there's a Linux MP3 player. I don't know for sure. You know for sure. And then I think AAC, I believe, is Apple's format. But since you can download it in either MP3 or AAC, that means you can do it on an iPod or a Zune or whatever else you are interested in getting.
So I get more bang for the buck for the MP3, I would think, right?
Yeah, if you were to download the MP3.
Yeah, okay. What about asking what's the better one to buy, or is there a variety, or I don't even have a clue.
Of an MP3, of a music player, or, you know, what are you wanting to buy?
Well, I want to play, so I could walk around and listen to these programs. So, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, basically you're looking for an MP3 player, and that really, it runs the gamut from little tiny iPod shuffles that hold songs but don't show you a contents list to, few hundred dollars that can hold huge amounts of
Microsoft
music.
Microsoft has their products, Creative has theirs, SanDisk has them.
Okay.
And the price range is from probably $20 to $30 on up into hundreds.
You probably do a review search online.
Yeah, I heard about, you ever used, what's it called, Newegg.com or not?
Right. Mm-hmm. I've purchased from there.
Yeah, is that a good one in terms of evaluation or not?
They do have, I've seen negative feedback on there. It's always good when you actually can find a website that lists products and they actually allow people to say bad things about what they're trying to sell.
Okay.
So that's...
Which one do you like in terms of evaluation?
I use Amazon, Newegg, and a lot of just independent stuff. There's a couple of tech blogs, websites that I review frequently. One of them is called Gizmodo, and the other one is called Engadget. And they both review products, and they have archives of what they've of their reviews.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Let's take another call. Also in Champaign, line two. Hi.
Line two? We can't. There's no one there. So let's go to another call. Decatur, line three, and we'll try and come back to line two. Line three, Decatur, hi.
Yes, hi. I have a quick question. I have an iMac. I would like to download videos off of YouTube. Can you recommend any good software to do that that's not going to put a lot of cookies and stuff on my computer?
So you want to download them so you can play them later?
Is yep.
That, okay. That's something I've never had much luck with. Jim?
I've never had the need to do it. I just did put out a call to somebody that might have done this and see if they're able to help us. But otherwise, I'm always connected online and I've never had an issue wanting to pull YouTube videos offline.
Okay. I realize, but I'd like to archive it for future just in case it leaves. Thanks.
Yeah, well, if I get an answer from this person, I'll get back to you.
Okay. In the meantime, we're going to take another call here coming up in just a moment. Let me reintroduce our guests, Jim Irick and Debbie Flagger. They are with Sites at the University of Illinois. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is Focus. Listeners, you can join us this morning with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, 800-222-9455, and the email address will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take another call now, a listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hello. I had a question. I have a 64-bit machine and bought a, the Office 2000, the new Office 2000. And Microsoft recommends not installing the 64-bit version, but installing the 32-bit version. I was wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I have the 64-bit version installed on my computer at work, and I have not run into too many issues. One of the things that I did run into in the beginning is that all of the Office products you have then must be 64-bit. You can't mix and match. So, for instance, I had the complete Office suite, which does not normally include Visio, which is a flowchart, for lack of a better term, creation tool. And I had to wait until the 64-bit version of Visio was released before I could use it on my desktop again. Otherwise, I don't even think about the fact that it's 64-bit. It just works.
Okay, good. I went ahead and installed the 32-bit version because they were making a big issue about it. But I said, this seems kind of strange that they didn't do it. So I probably should reinstall a 64-bit then.
I don't know what, and I didn't investigate this. I only did install the 64-bit version because I could. I don't know of any specific advantages when working with relatively small sized home office documents where the 64-bit version would be of any use whatsoever. Again, like I said, I only did it because it was available for download.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, well, I paid the big bucks, but the DVD has both versions on it. So you can do either one. Okay, thank you very much for your guidance.
You're welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener in Urbana on line two. Hello.
Hello. This is kind of in relation to the fellow from the IMC who called up about the free maintenance and work. There's another group in town called QCUG, or Champaign-Urbana Computer Users Group. Used to be a Commodore's group, and then an Amiga group, and an Amiga and a Mac group. And then as the systems go up and down, they change their SIGs. And they meet generally the third Thursday of every month over in a church in Savoy. But they have a web presence, QCUG, C-U-C-U-G. So if people are interested, they can check that area out. There's almost always somebody in the club that's interested in helping somebody. The other thing is, for the fellow that wanted to download YouTube videos, there is a, if you use Firefox, they have an add-on called Download Helper, which will convert it to another format. It won't be MP3 or MP4, and I can't, FLV, I think it is.
Right, I was just looking at that page.
I find that works very well. They keep it updated so that you can keep copies of things. So if you have somebody that you've found on YouTube that you'd like to keep a copy, you can download it, and they work very well, but you generally have to go out and get an FLV player of some sort. It's not something that you can just kind of pop up in QuickTime or Media Player, that sort of thing. But, yeah, so that's and that one's free. I've used it quite a bit for collecting odd videos and stuff like that.
And I expect that there every once in a while, some like YouTube or the Google Video will change the way they do stuff on their website, and you'll have to wait for Download Helper to update the software to be able to download it the new way, or has that not been an issue?
I've used it often enough that I generally run into the update for Download Helper before I run into a hassle on YouTube. So if you go got it set up in Firefox and you start up Firefox at certain times, they generally say, well, there's a new update for such and such. And then you can just go and, okay, update it, bang. And then I haven't had problems downloading anything from YouTube for a long time.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck. Bye.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 3. Hello.
Hi.
What can we help you with?
I have a question somewhat related to the previous conversation about 32 versus 64-bit. I have a copy of – I have the – I'm going to be upgrading to Windows 7, and it's a question of whether I should upgrade to 32 or 64-bit. The majority of my work is with Photoshop manipulating high-resolution images, and I know that 64-bit allows me to – go over the 4 gig memory limit, but I was wondering, is there really much of a difference? I know that 64-bit is a little more complicated. Is there anything I should really be aware of, or any other reasons that maybe I should stick with 32-bit over 64-bit?
Drivers. So that's the one issue that's the big sticking point for going with a 64-bit operating system is that then all your drivers have to be 64-bit. So if you have older printers or scanners, you may have a difficult time finding drivers to actually use those devices when you're booting into a 64-bit operating system. We're basically going through the same growing pains that happened when we switched from like Windows 3.1 and Windows 95 up to Windows XP, where people would buy new computers and they'd call me and I need to get the scanner working, and there was no way I could find drivers for their scanner that would work in Windows XP for them. They just had to buy new hardware. That's the one thing we're running into with 32-bit and 64-bit stuff. It's a relatively recent printer. You should be okay. You can always check with go to the manufacturer's website and check with them. A lot of network laser printers have pushed out 64-bit drivers for their products. HP and Xerox are the ones I'm familiar with. So that's the big one. And then you have to also, I believe if you do Photoshop, you also have to run then 64-bit Photoshop. I believe that's the case, that you then also have to run 64-bit Photoshop in order to open those larger images and go above the 4 gig limit. For me, the choice is easy. I tell people, if you buy a machine that has more than, because it's actually the amount of RAM plus the amount of addressable video space on your video card and a few other things. So it can be as little as if your machine has 3 gig of main RAM and half a gig or a gig of video card RAM, you're actually going to be exceeding the limit. Is if you have more than 2 gigs of main RAM in your machine, just get a 64-bit operating system. Deal with the pain now of having to replace hardware that's incompatible, that you can't find drivers for, and you won't have to do it again.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that pretty much meshes with what I was expecting. I mean, most of my hardware is within the last 2 years. And like my machine, I've got 4 gigs of RAM and a 1 gig graphics card. So, and I'm going to be looking to upgrade that pretty soon as well. So 64-bit looks like the way to go.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. This is Focus. We're talking this morning about computers with Jim Irick and Debbie Fleiger of Sites. My name is Celeste Quinn, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. The email address will-talk@illinois.edu. We've got about 6 minutes left in this portion of the program. Maybe here we could review a couple of things that we could do to keep our PCs running in top form, since we don't have anybody waiting for us on the phone at the moment.
Keep your system up to date with your manufacturer's, Microsoft or Apple or whatever, up-to-date service. Keep your antivirus up to date. Don't click on pop-ups.
Don't click on web pages, links in your mail. Your friend forwarded you whatever cute-looking thing. Don't click on it.
There's been a resurgence, and here's your gift or here's your holiday greeting card. I've been getting those lately, so that's been a little becoming more popular. So certainly, the first thing is delete. That's the answer. That's the easy answer.
Okay, let's take a call. I think this will be our last call this morning. Paris, Illinois, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I'm interested in your program. It's really good, and my question is, I have a laptop that runs XP, and it has Service Pack 2 and Service Pack 3, and I found that it kicked my Bluetooth, and my router won't work with it. And I was wondering if there's any way to adjust that so that I could use Service Pack 2 and Service Pack 3 and have a Bluetooth and a router function.
We should just have Service Pack 3 should have superseded Service Pack 2. So if you ask the operating system through right-clicking on my computer and go to properties, it should just say Service Pack 3 or SP3. I'm not aware of any inherent changes that were made in SP3 that would prevent your Bluetooth and your wireless from working. The number one recommendation would be to go to the manufacturer website and update to the newest drivers. There's possible that there was some incompatibility in that driver that SP3 closed. Again, it hasn't been wide. I haven't heard of any people having this specific problem, so I don't think it's very widespread. But I would definitely try to go find the newest drivers for your two device for those, because those would be two separate wireless chips. That's the Bluetooth one and the Wi-Fi. And update the drivers. I haven't. Otherwise, that would be the only place I'd start with for that problem.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And maybe we could get one more call in.
I do have one thing.
Yes.
On the topic of Christmas and gifts, there's always batteries. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I've been using these for a few years. There's and it's not a brand new technology, but a lot of people may not know about it. There's a technology called low self-discharge batteries now. One of the most popular brands is the Sanyo Inaloop. I have switched all of my AA and AAA battery requirements, so all my remote controls and things and portable gizmos over to these type of batteries. They last a long time. These aren't the old nickel cadmiums that I recall from my childhood that were, oh, hey, my toy works for 15 minutes. If we just bought Duracells, it'd been 4 hours kind of thing. These batteries have near the lifetime of a throwaway battery, and you can recharge them. I don't know what Sanyo's latest numbers say, but I know it's hundreds of times or more.
Okay.
And the other nice thing about them is, like they said, the LSD part, which is low self-discharge, is that you can charge them, put them in the box, and they will stay charged up. They don't discharge as fast as the old ones did.
Uh-huh.
So it used to be you never use rechargeable batteries in, like, your TV remote control because it would always go dead. The batteries would go dead within weeks because it was just sitting there. These batteries work. To me, they seem just like I'm using regular alkaline batteries. Sanyo's page says that their batteries are now rechargeable 1,500 cycles.
Okay.
And I think it's a really nice way to not be throwing the toxic metals that are in standard batteries into a dump and to save money.
Yeah, okay, very good. And we're not going to be able to take this last call this morning, unfortunately, but we do have 1 minute left or two, so maybe we could recall for folks the smart power strip. That's something we have talked about. I don't think we talked about the rechargeable batteries, Jim, but the smart strip, we talked about that maybe once, maybe twice, and that's also a way to save on the electricity bill and, you know, maybe do something nice for Mother Nature.
I have a new one. I don't think I've discussed it. Right now, off the top of my head, I can't even think who manufactured it, but it's a little block that plugs into an outlet or my surge strip, and on the side of it has a you can select how long the power stays on, and all it has is one power outlet and a button. So I have it set, I think, for 3 hours, and I have my laptop charger plugged into it. So when I'm done using my laptop, I plug it into the charger, and I push this button. It'll only charge the laptop for 3 hours, and then it'll shut the charger off. So overnight, it's not using any power.
Right.
I found that very useful for that.
Okay, very good. And if we were going to you know, look for that online, you know, in terms of products that we had to choose from? What kind of search term would we use?
Green power strips, smart power strips,
okay.
Probably.
All right.
I think, and I wish I knew off the top of my head which company made that. It's either Belden or Belkin. But green power supplies or smart power supplies. And there's some other companies. You might run across somebody's blog that they just list a lot of these different things on strategies for reducing your electrical usage.
Okay, very good. And there we will wrap it up for Computers and You on Focus for the month of December. And my thanks to Jim and Debbie. They are with Sites, Jim Eyrick and Debbie Flieger, and they will be back with us in January on the 6th. Of January. So Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and we'll see you in the new year.
You too.
You too.
Okay, very good.